Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Zygenkov have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Howe, who scores! Bobby Howe!
Junot trying to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bork and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men. Cutting for the net, he's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brunet carries in, rolling in front of the net, and shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short shot. Here he is again. Scores! Desjardins!
It is double waiting.
All right, hockey fans, you're listening to Hard Checking, Kick Saving, Sudden Death Scoring, NHL Breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com, where we're bringing you all the on- and off-ice action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues. Today is, of course, Friday, November 16th, completing another week of fantasy hockey. Lots to talk about. George and I started talking about some of these unexpectedly good teams to start the season. A team like Vancouver, we're going to talk about teams like, you know, the Ottawa Senators, the Montreal Canadiens as well. But I actually sort of want to go slightly off that in talking about the Anaheim Ducks, a team that most people had them making the playoffs, if for no other reason than, you know, it's a little fishy with that Pacific Division, some, you know, longstanding rebuilding teams like in Arizona. Some people feeling Edmonton really wasn't much of a team outside of McDavid. Vancouver is embracing their makeover and their rebuild, you know. So almost by default, everybody's like, okay, you know, you got a pretty strong, solid team in Anaheim up and down. So we'll all pick them to finish second or third place, as most prognosticators did in coming into the season. But it hasn't kind of worked out that way. So even though Anaheim's not that sort of expected to be bad team that's doing better than expected here in their early season, I do find them intriguing. I want to talk to George about them and see whether he thinks they're really going to be good once they get healthy. Yes, I know Cam Fowler just went down with an injury. He's going to be out a couple of months. But aside from that, they were just about close to being pretty much healthy outside of Corey Perry. So once they're healthy and we got the quote-unquote real deal, is this a good team or not? So we're going to talk about that. And it might not have been earth-shattering, but we did have a trade more than just sort of a fourth line or a minor leaguer moving here early in the season. The Pittsburgh Penguins and the L.A. Kings swap forwards. Carl Hagelin going to the West Coast in L.A. Tanner Pearson coming to the Iron City. We'll talk about that. And then, of course, we have a full slate on the fantasy reports. Lots of injuries to talk about. Even more things going on in the goaltending world. We'll get to that shortly. So, George, let's start off with these Anaheim Ducks. And one of the reasons why I brought them up here in terms of a team that I kind of want to sort of single out as we're approaching the quarter point of the season is because I find them an interesting mix. They certainly have some high-priced and name players, some players that are coming into their own, into the prime of their careers, guys like Gibson, maybe Raquel as well, potentially. You know, and it seems like they followed this pattern the last couple of years. And this might have something to do with the fact that they're a little bit of an older team, but it seems like the early season in particular, October and November, you've got not one or two, but like four, five, six guys who've been injured. These guys finally come back and they get healthy around Thanksgiving. And then not that this team is a world beater, but suddenly, boom, they're off and they're running. They're a playoff team. Maybe they have some of their ups. Maybe they have some of their downs. But there's like sort of more of a shadow of doubt, at least from what I'm perceiving so far this year, even though we're quite frankly, you know, following a lot of the same pattern. You know, Kotze just came back, Getzlaf's been out. You've had a number of other players, Kessler, of course, who were out to start the season, who have slowly come back and filled up the lineup. Eaves recently came back. He's back out with an injury, but it's an upper body injury that looks like he'll probably be out for two to four more games. But he was a little rusty in his return anyway. But still, he's practically returning as well. So outside of the Fowler injury that just happened, and obviously that's going to be a big deal, it is a complex fracture facial fracture out months, not 2 months or 3 months, just months. So we know, obviously, it's going to be a while there, and that is a significant injury. But playing partially devil's advocate here, George, well, I'm going to sort of put Perry on the side because he's not back till March, and he's been fading, you know. So I guess I'm going to sort of also put Fowler on the side. You know, are you on board with this idea that once Anaheim was healthy, they'd be fine, they'd be a likely playoff team? Or do you think it's more than that? Is this sort of like shades of the L.A. Kings where they're just, A, getting older, because they're not much younger than those Kings, and B, a similar type of team that they're, you know, sort of that quote-unquote old-time hockey of playing big, heavy game. They're going to check you. They're going to run you into the ground. They're going to play defense, at least in theory. And that's how they're going to win, because classically over the years, that's how you win in the playoffs. It's changed somewhat in the last few years. That might not be the case. So, again, George, do you like this team when you look at this Anaheim team and it's just a matter of them getting healthy, or do you have bigger concerns that even if they get healthy, they might be in trouble in terms of making the playoffs? George, what do you think when you see the Anaheim Ducks?
Well, I've never been a big Ducks fan. This is a team that's always played better as a whole than the sum of its parts. When you think of even past couple of years, Getzlaf hasn't been the same player. Perry, you mentioned, hasn't been the same player. Perry's out now. They've had a lot of injuries, even coming into the season now. The question is, are you panicking? Are they going to get better? You know, they're 8-9-3, so they're a 500 team, and they withstood the injuries. Good for them. The question is, now do they get better? Sure, but I think they're also benefiting from the fact that the whole division hasn't played as well as we expect them to play. You know, the Sharks are only 10-7-3. Same amount of games, only two games ahead, 4 points. Vancouver Canucks, we expect to, I don't want to say full, but certainly not play as well as they have been. Calgary, they may be what they are, 10-8-1. You know, we'll go discuss more in the goalie report, but they have had issues in goal year. With Mike Smith not playing well, maybe that's keeping them down. Edmonton, we know, is not a very good team. Not bad, but not good. Arizona, not bad, not good. Vegas, no shock there, right? Yeah, Vegas not coming down from last season. Maybe they've come a little bit too far down. Also a team dealing with injuries. But they weren't going to have the year they had last year. And the Kings, I mean, they're the whatever can go wrong will go wrong team. They're having all sorts of issues, especially in net. And they're a team. Kings and Ducks are almost, in my mind, in the same boat here. A team that's still maybe playing hockey the way it was 10 years before that now. And not really hasn't caught up that the game today is skating, speed. It's not playing a heavy game. You can get away with it sometimes, but getting away with it over and over and over again. I think the Kings went ballistic. They went because they're old. The Ducks, not quite that old, but in the same realm. So I think that is part of the issue here. But like I said, I've never liked the Ducks, and they've always outperformed what I thought they could do. Maybe now it's catching up to them. But like I said, I'm not panicking here. You're 8-9-3. You're 500. You have had a lot of injuries. You know, we've only mentioned a few of them. They've had a lot of players get hurt. Patrick Easley went back on the IR this week. Perry is out. They had several other players get hurt. Kessler just came back. I'm willing to give them a shot here. I don't think this is a Stanley Cup competing team. I don't think this is going to compete for a division title. I think you're just competing for the playoffs. Yeah, I think that's what you're really competing here. I don't see any of the teams in this division outside of the Sharks that's immensely better than them. That they can't compete with. Gibson's played very well to start the season. That's important. Other than that, I think the Flames are better, but not immensely better. Everybody else, I can make an argument, they're better than. So I think they could be the third best team in this division. The problem may, and that's good because top three teams make it. The problem may be, if you don't finish top three, going for that wild card, well, then you look at the Western Conference, and there's a lot of teams better than you. You know, Nashville, Minnesota, Peg. You're up there with Colorado. I know St. Louis not playing well, but they're a similar team to you. So it's funny how some of these old-time teams that we expected to be better, but maybe have them are still caught up. I don't want to put St. Louis. Say St. Louis is all struggling. They've only played 16 games, strange. At 6-7-3 is similar to Anaheim. I don't think they are, but they're in that same realm. It's not quite to the depth that Anaheim and Los Angeles have gone as far as not adjusting to today's game. So it's I guess the bottom line is this, Scott. I'm not down on them. If you would have asked me to pick a team that we were going to discuss today that I was worried about, I wouldn't have been Anaheim. I don't know if Anaheim would have been my top five. I think they are where they are mainly because of injuries, not because of their style. And maybe I'm just coming to the realization where I've been on this team over and over again. How I don't know why they play as well as they do. And now I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I've seen it before, and I'll see it again. Do I think they're caught up with today's game? No. I think it's biting LA in the ass right now. Maybe it'll bite Anaheim as well, but I do like their players a little bit more than the Kings players.
Yeah, I think if you're going to make the comparison to LA, I'd have to agree that I certainly like this team a little bit better. And I feel like I can make a pretty convincing case, George, spinning this either way in terms of the positive or the negative, and the fact that the positive, okay, we have seen this team do this before, like three of the last 4 years where they've been injured, they get healthy, and then by the time the All-Star break rolls around, we're not talking about this team as this sort of massive disappointment. But then again, they usually go ahead to the playoffs and they don't make much of a run here. You look at this team, I do feel Raquel is coming into his own and gets left, though he is sort of starting to fade a little bit the last couple of years. He's still a pretty good, legit back-end top center. I mean, I don't think he's like, one of the top 12, top 15 number one centers in the league, but I still think he is a legit number one guy. So you have that tandem on the top line. You can make the argument that you've had that Silverberg, Kessler, Cogliano line, that's been effective for years. And you just sort of need Kessler to, sort of shake off the rust. Sort of get back to that level. And then Henrique really did play very well for them, much better than I expected. Not that he was a world beater, but when he came over from the Devils, and then you have, Akase, who at least at the end of last year, second half of last year, looked like he was coming to his own, and he has some chemistry with Henrique. So you got that anchoring another line. So you look at it in that way, and, you've got something really to work with. Plus you got Aberg, who's played pretty well, Comtos, who started off the season, start to fade before the injury, then Nick Ritchie and Eves, who also got a throw in the mix. But I do think this is a style of play thing, George, because I look at other teams in the division who, quote-unquote, play the game faster. And it's really not that these other teams – I'm not looking at Calgary or Edmonton or L.A., or even San Jose, and saying, wow, those teams have speed. They can't keep up with them. Like, player by player, those teams are so much faster than Anaheim. Yes, they got some older guys. Kessler's sort of slowing down a little bit. Getzlaff was never a speedster. He's slowing down a little bit. Perry, when he was healthy. But outside of that, like, this isn't like a dreadfully slow team. I wouldn't call Anaheim a speed team. They've got good, solid average speed. So my point is that they are capable of, quote-unquote, playing the game faster. I do think this is a little bit, and this hurts me a little bit, because I sort of like that sort of heavy defensive style of hockey. I can appreciate those 2-1 games. Yes, I love the 5-4 higher scoring games. They're exciting when you got a lot more scoring chances, but I've always had an appreciation for the defensive game, so I feel a little bad saying this and betraying Carlisle, but I do think, him sticking to the, most teams play more of a 4-line game. Carlisle, even though if you compare him to a couple of years ago, plays more of a 4-line game than he used to, but he's still really playing 3 lines, 2 scoring lines and a checking line, and that 4th line is essentially an afterthought, and I just sort of mix them in here and there. I don't think that sort of works. I don't think the sort of slowness, the Daryl Sutter, the Randy Carlisle type of game really works anymore, at least not unless you modify it to have more of an up-tempo game. So outside of the injuries, and I'm not sitting here campaigning, although I guess maybe I am, for Carlisle to be fired, because I do think he's a good coach and a worthy coach. I just don't think it works anymore. And that's the thing that I think is missing. Yes, I do think that once this team gets healthy, and how assuming Fowler's not too much of an undercutting of that defense, and they're missing him, I do expect this team to essentially be a playoff team, although it might be more on the cusp and sort of the wild card area. But they worry me, because as much as I sort of detailed where I think there's this positive here and you've got a potentially pretty nice top line, what if Getzlaff is sort of that injury-prone, declining guy? He's not going to reach his 50, 60 points assist anymore. If he doesn't do that year in and year out, his value really kind of goes out the window, if Kessler's never quite the same. As much as I like that line that I mentioned, defensively they weren't nearly as good as they were the 2 prior years. And Case, yes, I think he looks like he's on the verge of breaking out, but What if he's not, doesn't? What if he's really just a 20-goal guy instead of a guy who's pushing 25 or 30 like it looked like he could bloom into at the end of last year? Then you've got a whole lot of worry. And then and I haven't even talked about the defense yet. And I like the defensive group here overall, but the defense, George, even before the Fowler injury, just not playing very well. So here you have Carlisle, defensive coach, who sort of leans in that direction of the way he coaches and runs a team, and that part of the team is not very running very well. If you have the Gibson classic injury problems, you know, that's the only thing sort of holding this team together. Gibson's played very well for the most part, but he does have that injury issue. Now, I'm sort of getting to the point where I think he's moving past it, but again, I wouldn't sort of die on that hill if somebody came to me and said, hey, I still consider Gibson injury prone, and that worries me. So Anaheim Ducks kind of on the fence. I'm kind of curious to see how it will go. George, one final question about the Anaheim Ducks. You know, based on what we were both saying, are you still really liking the fantasy potential of this team? You know, I mean, Getzlaff might be a one-category guy at this point in his career, just assists, but he still gets 60. I got to imagine that's got to make him at least a depth center. Raquel, I imagine, is a guy that most people you think should have. But after that, if this team starts clicking, do guys like Kase, maybe Aberg, or Henrique, Silverberg start off the season really good, the first six, eight games offensively? Does this have a lot of fantasy potential here on this team? Or because of the concerns we both mentioned, okay, I like them, but I'm not really pining for too many guys here on my fantasy club. George?
Well, I think it's probably closer to the second part of that. I mean, you mentioned it. If you're going with guys, you need assists. I mean, that's fine. It's a category. Maybe you need it. But it's center, you could certainly do better. So I'm not trying for him. Raquel, he's a wing. He's a starting wing for you, at the very least a flex play. After that, I mean, in my mind, you'll get guys. Silverberg, you can make an argument for. He's having a nice start to the season. Silverberg, Kase, Eves, when he returns, these are probably guys you plug in when they're hot, and either you're benching or you're releasing when they're not. Then you move on. These are certainly not game in and game out players. You're going to put them in your lineup and leave it. Unless you're in a deeper league. But for most of you, starting at most two right wings, you know, in a flex, you only need three. There's no reason to worry about it there. And so you plug them in when they got a four-game week, when they're playing well, but then you move on from them. Defense, Lindholm is in your top four. He should be in there. Fowler, when healthy, was probably in there for you. Montour, maybe, but not someone I'm dying for. He'd be a D4. Once again, someone you can move on from. You don't need him game in and game out. Gibson is a it could be a low-end goaltending one, but the way, until the injuries, he probably had moved into a top-end goaltender too. But either way, he's starting goaltender there. But the bottom line is this. There's not a player that's going to win you a fantasy league. I mean, out of all these players I just named, with the exception of maybe Gibson, goalies are valuable, especially in this what's going on this season with goaltenders. I mean, even Raquel, I like Raquel. He's not a championship-winning player you have to have. You know, if I had Raquel, great. He goes on the IR, I'm not going to cry about it. Yeah, you plug somebody else in, you'll be okay. So that's the bottom line here. There are no top players here. You know, you draft, there's no player you're taking here outside of Gibson in the top five rounds. You know, that I feel like Raquel is close to that, but nobody else. They have some names, you know, Getzlaff, you know, Kessler. But other than that, nobody I'm dying to have in my roster.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment of what you've got here. And I do like Raquel. I have him on a couple of my teams, so I'm sort of all about him. But I agree with that. He's not sort of a must-have, especially with state of this team, but I like the way that you put it. A lot of guys, especially in deeper leagues, that sort of could be those bench guys, the guys you play when you're hot, the guys that have, like, when they have four-game weeks in a weekly league that you're going to stick in there, sort of the back end of your roster. So it's not a sort of soft, not a lost cause, but not sort of the offensive juggernaut than, say, they were when Getzlaff and Perry were in their prime and you had to have them on your team. All right, George, I did mention that there was a trade. It wasn't an earth-shattering trade, but the Penguins and the Kings did swap forwards. Carl Hagelin going to the L.A. Kings. Tanner Pearson coming back to the East, to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Now, I don't expect that this is overly earth-shattering, but Pearson did start out on a line with Malkin and Hornquist. That's not a bad place to line up. If I line up with those guys, I'm sure I could sort of hit double digits in goals, just have Malkin, you know, pass it off my derriere or the back of my legs into the net. I think would happen quite a lot. So there's that possibility. And Hagelin has always sort of been sort of that second line, third line guy, not quite having the hands, but sometimes his speed in the past alone has sort of been something that can generate some offense just with the threat of his speed, even though he doesn't have a whole lot of hands to go with it. So, George, you know, when you look at this trade, you know, does it have, you know, does it hit your radar that significantly? Or is this sort of a whatever thing? Is this really more of a trade to sort of shake up the teams and get them to have a wake-up call? Or do you think that these players actually have some potential to make a difference on their new teams? George?
Well, it's on the fantasy radar because we've heard of the players, right? And we've heard of these guys. You've heard of Tanner Pearson. You've heard of Cole Hagelin, so it's on the fantasy radar. It's I don't think it's any shock that the Kings made a deal, right? We just discussed them. They're not playing very well at all. 5-11-1. Pittsburgh, 7-7-3. Nowhere near as bad, but hey, they're at the bottom of the Metropolitan Conference. So two of, I guess, the biggest surprises on the negative side going into so far this season. You can throw St. Louis in here as well, as far as the team we expected more from. Florida, actually, maybe put in here as well, although they haven't, once again, they haven't played many games. Even Pittsburgh's only played 17 games. There's a reason they're in last, because they played two, three games less than everybody else. So I'm not surprised here. We had heard that Pittsburgh was unhappy, that Rutherford was unhappy with the way they were playing with GM there, and that he might shake things up. L.A., this could be the first of a couple of trades here. So I think this is what you saw here. I can see it from both parts. I think as far as talent, Pittsburgh wins that. Pearson does have talent. Part of that 70s line a couple of seasons ago with Carter, with Jeff Carter, and maybe he turns it around playing, you mentioned it, you know, you play with Malcolm, you're playing with Crosby, when he returns, you could do some damage there. We'll see what happens. He has a little bit more term, a little bit more, well, you know what you're getting here? For the Kings, you take on Hagelin, I think you're just praying. You can move him in February for a pick, prospect, something like that. You know, you're not planning on keeping him long term. You're just planning on moving him. I guess you might ask, well, then why trade Pearson? You know, he had value or has value. Couldn't you have done the same thing with him? Yeah, but I think right now LA's thinking, hey, let's try to shake things up, see if we can break this team out. It's not like we don't have a chance to make the playoffs here. You know, yes, we have 11 points. You know, it's not looking good. But as I mentioned, that whole division's not playing well. You know, it's not playing as well as we expected to be. And they've played the least amount of games. And you look at the Vancouver Canucks, they have 22 points. They've played four more games than the Kings. Theoretically, you know, the Kings could be just 3 points behind them if they can win those four games. I know that's unlikely, but you get my point there. When they, once they make up those games, the standings could look a whole lot closer here. So I don't think the Kings are giving up yet. I just think this is the you want to call it a shot across the bow? Letting the players know, hey, you know, we've given you time. It's not working here. Trade Pearson. If you don't want to be next, you better play better. Yeah, so I think it could be that sort of situation going on there. And almost the same thing in Pittsburgh. You know, other than that fact, I think this trade makes more sense for them because they get a better player. So I think it's a good deal for them, a good hockey deal. Where LA the Kings, I think it was just a matter of saying, hey, that's it. I can't wait any longer. I've got to do something. And we'll see if it breaks them out here.
Yeah, you know, I think that pretty much sums it up very well. Tanner Pearson, you know, even if he doesn't sort of find the, you know, the guy who can contribute offensively, and when I say contribute, I'm never looking at Pearson to be like 25, 27 goals, you know, and 60 points plus. But I am looking for him to be a 20-goal, 45, 50-point guy that sort of fits in as the sixth guy in your top six or fits in nicely in your top line, your top nine, excuse me, you know. I'm not shocked that Pittsburgh did this, you know, but from a salary cap standpoint, you know, I was just a little surprised they took on a little bit of term, you know, because Hagelin, this is his last year, and Pearson, he's got two more years at a similar sort of price point kind of situation. But, you know, I think it's a good solid sort of pick up and a shake me up, and let's see if we can pick up where you were a couple of years ago, you know. And I just think L.A. was a little bit over him, you know. Last year, just the 15 goals and 40 points, just 1 point in 17 games so far this year. You know, and he just wasn't looking like that player who could legitimately like carry or be a top end part of your top six. Just doesn't surprise me. And LA, I sort of agree with you, George, that they're not giving up here, but I do feel like they're giving up here because, you know, I think Hagelin's biggest value is what you just sort of said, trading him at the deadline, because he slips into the third line, and I don't see him unless a guy like Iafallo sort of like face plants on that top line. I don't see having squeaking into that top six. And if he could squeeze in the top six, even though I still wouldn't sort of put much stock on him producing much points, he could sort of be that creator for the other guys in his line. Again, being worried about that speed and having to sort of adjust to it as it comes in hard in the forecheck could open things up for the other guys in his line, no matter who he plays with. So, again, I wouldn't put much fantasy stock in him putting up points if he got into that top six, but I don't even see that happening. So I do feel like this is L.A. saying, well, you know what? We can't move, and we're not going to be able to move Kolbochuk and Brown and Jeff Carter and Toffoli has sort of been even just as disappointing with as Pearson, but even had a higher ceiling. I think most people thought he'd be have trouble to move at $4.6 million. So I think Pearson, with their disappointment and clear a little cap space, as you said, we're not keeping Caglin, so you sort of just made about $4 million of cap space, moving on for next year. So if they were to try to make some sort of move, or more notable moves down the line or in the off season, that they have a little more cap space to do that. Even if they were to try to, say, move a Brown or a Kolbochuk or a Carter and eat part of their contract to facilitate that, now this gives them a little bit more cap space to possibly do that. So ultimately, you know, with the outlying effect of Pearson, as you said, George, I don't think this has much of an impact at all on the certainly fantasy or too much on the ice, again, unless Pearson sort of ends up clicking with Crosby or with Malkin. And I could see him possibly working well with Crosby. You know, Crosby does like sort of those grinder, blue-collar type players more than the high-end skill guys that won't necessarily go in the dirty areas. And Pearson, we all go there. So there is some possibility there, but I'm going to wait and see how it plays out before I go run out and snap Pearson up off the waiver wire. All right, George, let's turn our attention to the fantasy reports with the IR and line support. Starting things off as usual, I talked a little bit about Anaheim already, but you do have Ease with the upper body injury. Lands him on the IR. He is out this weekend, and I would guess another game or two after that before he gets back in the lineup. And I already mentioned that Fowler is going to be out a couple of months at least with his facial fracture injury there. In Arizona, some injuries on the back line. We already knew Golgowski had the lower body injury. Has been put on the IR, but can come back pretty much any time. I do think it's going to be a couple more games. They did it retroactively, but it was partially to sort of make some moves, so it does look like another game or two before he gets back in the lineup. Demers with a lower body injury, listed as day-to-day, likely out for Saturday as well. And Chychrun, who recently returned, is day-to-day with an upper body injury himself. More injuries on the back line, moving to the Boston Bruins, and this could be even more significant as Zdeno Chara with a leg injury, thought to be a knee injury, has been sent home from the road trip and is out indefinitely. It looks like he's going to be out at least a couple of weeks, so it's just really a matter of, is this going to be out for a couple of weeks or is he going to be out for a couple of months? And if it's a couple of months, you might have a big issue for the Boston Bruins. You already have McAvoy out with that concussion. He has begun skating, but it does look like he is a minimum of a week to two away before McAvoy gets on the ice. You also have Carlo, who's got the upper body injury, landed him on the IR. And he does look like he's out at least through the middle of the week. Late next week, it's possible for him to come back as well. But also, Kayvon Miller with that injury is on the IR. He's traveling to the team, but not expected to play this week and into the beginning of next week. So basically, four of your top six defensemen are out with injury. Even getting Rask back, that's got to be concerning on the defensive end for the Boston Bruins. George, I'll ask you when we get to the goalie report whether all those injuries would sort of make you gun-shy in starting that Boston pair, either one of those guys. I'm not sure with all the other news with the goaltenders that would be the case. You might need to start them, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. Moving on to the Buffalo Sabres. Second line, it looks like they're starting to maybe, dare I say, find a little something. That top line with Skinner and Eichel has been working well. They've recently, as we talked about, put Reinhart back up there, but it's the middle step line, their second line, that they have not been able to really find much production or chemistry. It looks like they might be starting to crack that nut, as Sheary does have 5 points in the last five games, Middlestat 3 points in the last five games, and Okposo 3 points in the last five games, all playing together on that second line, might indeed have some potential. Not telling anybody to run out for fantasy and get some and pick these guys up, but it's certainly a situation to keep your eye on if it does continue progressing. In Calgary, they're still looking for a right wing to play on that second line with Backlund and Tkachuk. And Calgary has been doing a few things to sort of, goose the production from that second line. This year, the first line, the Monahan line, is having a lot more defensive starts to their shifts. The back line always sort of carried the brunt of, and it's still sort of carrying a lot of it, but they're trying to give that back line more offensive starts and to put them in a better position to produce, but they're also trying to look for a right wing to play with those two. Neil, Bennett, Darnik, and Frolik have all been given chances lately, and none of them have taken the reins just yet, so if they can find somebody who clicks with that, that does have some potential for fantasy owners as well. In Carolina, Aho was practicing in a non-contact jersey, does expect to be fine for Saturday's game. With Peace with the lower body injury listed day-to-day, he is probable to return on Saturday as well. In Chicago, just notable about those lines, sticking with those, that small Taze and Patrick Kane line as your number one. I'm still worried about DeBrincat long-term playing on that line with Kemp and Quinn since they've been put together these last couple of games. They've been definitely getting third-line minutes. So keep an eye on that situation if you are a fantasy owner that does have to bring cat. In Columbus, Panarin and Riley Nash were ill, missed one game, did not practice today, and they are both questionable for Saturday's game. Doesn't look like it'll be a long-term past that. So after Saturday, she'll be back in the lineup if they can't get back by Saturday. If Panarin is sick again, expect Bjorkstrand to continue taking his place as a left wing on the top line with Dubas and Atkinson. In Dallas, Devon Short, the lower body injuries got him out 1 to 2 weeks, which is a shame because he was playing pretty well of late. You do have that top line together, as I predicted on Monday, of Radulov, Seguin, and Jamie Benn, and then Spezza playing with Brent Ritchie and Yarmouk, looks like you're going to be your second line. Hanzel. I haven't heard hide or hair of him all season because of his injury. It looks like he is scheduled and targeted to return at the end of November for the Dallas Stars. For the Detroit Red Wings, Vanek with that lower body injury could return sometime in the middle of late next week. And shaking up the lines in Edmonton as Drysdale moved back to the right wing to play with McDavid and Kagula as your new top line. It'll be interesting to see if they do indeed keep them together. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was centering your second line with Chiasson and Ryder, but they lost Ryder to an upper body injury that's going to keep them out about a month or so there. In L.A., they might have some more young recruits to add to the lineup as Velarde with that back injury, number one draft choice from 2 years ago, was cleared for full practices. It does look like it's going to be a couple more weeks before he can be evaluated and determine what they're going to do with him, whether they're going to send him down, give him a chance to play with the team or not. And I suspect that they're, if all things are equal, they're going to try and give him a chance. Why not, with the way the seasons are going, get some speed and youthful exuberance and offensive potential in that lineup? That would be what I'd be looking for. In Minnesota, Parise, who missed one game because of being ill, is okay for Saturday. And in Montreal, Shea Weber with that knee injury, officially 2 weeks ahead of schedule. He could play by the end of November, first week of December, so fantasy owners should be looking to get him back in the lineup sooner rather than later. In Nashville, Arvidsson with that thumb injury is going to keep him out 6 to 8 weeks. Fiala will move back up to the top line and take his place with Johansson and Forsberg while he's gone. And Austin Watson did finish and back in the lineup for the Predators as well. For the New Jersey Devils, Hershier with an upper body injury has missed the last two, says he feels fine, is going to check with trainers and see how he feels after practice today and the skate to morning skate tomorrow, but he would like to get back into the lineup for Saturday's game as well. My suspicion is that he is going to be centering Gratt and Johansson on the second line when he does come back, keeping that Zajac, Hall, and Palmieri line together as well. For the New York Islanders, Ladd with a lower body injury lands him on the IR, so we should be missing him for a couple of weeks. And I'm not telling anybody to go pick up Kunackle, but 3 points in three games since joining the second line with Brock Nelson and Eberle as well. And Nelson does have 6 points in the last four games. Eberle, 3 points in the last two games as well. Dare I say that second line is starting to produce? Should anybody be naive enough to consider that, to think that will continue? Never know. That's why I'm drawing your attention to it as well. In Philadelphia, James Van Riemsdyk, as predicted earlier this week, did return yesterday to the lineup for the Philadelphia Flyers, joining that third line with Wheel and Simmons. So that top line takes on the same look that it had to start the season for the Philadelphia Flyers. Gudas also will return to the lineup after missing two games because of being ill. In Pittsburgh, you might have heard upper body injuries got him listed as day-to-day, did not practice today, missed one game, and is realistically out at least a week to 10 days before he gets back in the lineup. Knowing Crosby, I wouldn't be surprised if it's closer to a week. Now, it does look like Broussard, with that lower body injury, could return tomorrow. He was taking line rushes today. I know they've sort of been taking it nice and easy with him, but between him getting better and Crosby out, I do suspect he's going to center the second line between Kessel and Gunsell. And we already mentioned that top line is Malkin, Pearson, and Hornquist for the Pittsburgh Penguins. For the San Jose Sharks, Hurdle with that lower body injury has now missed four of the last six games. It was officially listed as day-to-day, likely out for Saturday's game, and then it's a big question mark after that, whether this is going to be multiple games that he's going to be missing or even multiple weeks. We do expect an update for Monday's show. In the meantime, switching around the lines again, partly with because Hedl is out, it's Couture centering Pavelski and Meyer, Thornton centering LeBanc and Sorensen, and Kane, Somalia, and Donskoy put back together as well as they were at the start of the season. For the St. Louis Blues, Braden Schenn with that upper body injuries has been put on the IR, and this is, again, really more for administrative so they can make a move and call somebody up. Since he is still questionable for their next game, he has missed the last four games, could come off the IR at any time, was not officially ruled out for Friday's night's game, and Yalbuff all day yesterday and this morning refused to rule him out. So he could play tonight, but if he's not back tonight, he should be back in the next game or two for the St. Louis Blues. But also for the Blues, Maroon with an upper body injury that'll miss his day-to-day. He's going to be out for at least a couple of games, flew back to St. Louis for treatment and evaluation. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, Matthews with that shoulder injury is skating with the team, still a good 10 days away from returning. And for the Vegas Golden Knights, Hula with that lower body injury has been updated from day-to-day to month-to-month. And again, not telling anybody to run out and snap him up unless you're in deeper leagues, but Eakin is doing a pretty good job while Hula is out. The center is only 4% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues. In the last five games, he's got four goals, two assists, a shorthanded point, and centering that second line between Tuck and Pacioretty. For the Washington Capitals, speaking of reduction of suspensions, Tom Wilson, an outside arbitrator, reduces his suspension to 14 games. Capitals have already played 16, so he was back in the lineup and back on that top line with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov in his first game back. But I don't know if he'll be playing there again this game because of injuries. Oshie, with an upper body injury, he's got a list as day-to-day, is officially out for Friday's game. And I would expect he's going to be in a few games here, especially if you saw that hit. He definitely looked pretty woozy when Morrison hit him. George, I might actually ask you about that in just a moment. But also, the Washington Capitals, Kuznetsov, an upper body injury list is day-to-day. He is out for Saturday. He seems more realistic to come back after tonight's game for the Washington Capitals. So I suspect, although I do not have confirmation on this, that Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Tom Wilson will be your top line for the Capitals for the next game. And in Winnipeg, Line A officially rejoins that second line, playing with Little and Connor on the second line. And George, Josh Morrissey hit Oshie in the corner the other night and slammed him down to the ice pretty good. Like, the hit itself didn't seem bad, but what everybody was sort of debating and talking about was that hit, because he kind of seemed to grab him. Morrison was on his left side of Oshie, and they went to the board together, and it almost looked like he grabbed Oshie, like, right by the armpit and the chest and kind of threw him down to the ice, and Oshie hit his head. Now, Morrissey was not suspended, but he was given the maximum fine of just under $8,500. And just, I'm just curious, George, especially since we've talked about a couple of other incidents that at least had some similar qualities to it, you know, in terms of the, okay, this seems an above and beyond a hockey hit. It's one of the reasons why I want to sort of follow up with you and ask you, okay, he doesn't really have much of a history more, is he, in terms of a negative history. So are you okay with this sort of with this fine, or because of, you know, did you think the hit was egregious, that he should have been suspended at least for a game or two just to continue for the NHL to get their point across? So Morrissey hit on Oshie, George. What do you think?
Well, he actually does have a history. This is the guy who I think it was during last year's playoffs, actually. I forget the player he hit, but he hit the player in the head right in front of his own net that the refs didn't see because he wasn't involved. And the player just went up to him and leveled him. And he didn't know why. Probably didn't mean to hit him in the head, but he did. So he does have a history, just not of something like this. This is very similar to the Matheson play on Pettersson. I mean, so it's almost the exact same thing. There's nothing wrong with the hit itself. It's the fact that he after the hit, he takes him and throws him down to the ice. Now, I'm watching it on loop now, just so I can I sort of resume what had happened, but I'm just keep watching on loop over and over again to refresh my memory here. And that's what he does. You know, he's caught up in him. And maybe he's trying to get loose there, but, you know, rather than just pull yourself out, he just throws him down to get his stick, his arms out of there. You know, which, you know, I could see that, but anyway you look at it, he throws him down. You suspended Matheson for it, but you didn't suspend Morrissey. I'd like to hear the NHL's reasoning why. You know, once again, Morrissey does have a history. He got away with one that the refs didn't see, so he's not an angel here. In my mind, the problem is this, Scott. You find him $8,860, whatever, nothing. That's chump change to any NHL, any player, but it's the maximum allowed here. So I don't see how that deters anyone. You already set a precedent when you suspended Matheson for this. You know, and oh, she's hurt. Man, that's a big thing in the NHL. I think it's silly. I think it's completely idiotic that you get suspended only if the player is hurt. But Oshie got hurt. He's a concussion protocol. So this didn't add up to me. I was surprised. I guess that's the bottom line. I was surprised. So all the reasons you said, the reasons I just mentioned, I thought he'd get a game. You know, maybe two at most. But I thought he'd get a game here. Only because, you know, if they would have had a fine thing where they could fine him $50,000, I'd probably be good with that. But, you know, $8,800, that's literally like, you know, a couple of dollars to you and me. You know, it's not hurting him. He's not going to feel that. You know, so I thought that was kind of silly there. So, yes, I am surprised they didn't suspend him for a game.
Yeah, and that's what I really would have wanted. And not two or three games. I mean, I think one game would have at least mollified me, but I do think that it was sort of deserving. Again, just with sort of staying consistent and the precedent that you've already set. All right, George, I teased it on Twitter, and I teased it at the top of the show. Goalie report. Wow. We had like two or three goalie reports a few shows ago that were all really nice. They were all like players coming back. Everything was trending well. Goalies that were struggling to start the season were starting to play a little better. And then the last two and a half shows, my God, injury, injury, injury. Even some players coming back, not playing well. So the rotation is up in the air, or at least has some red flags to it. This, that, and the other thing. I mean, I think there's got to be like a double-digit goalie situations and injuries to report, if I'm not mistaken, for this show. And then if you sort of take in recent events, it's pushing two-thirds of the league that in the last 3 weeks have had either some injury, some question and goal by players not playing bad, or just something going on that wasn't necessarily making fans or fantasy owners very comfortable. So, George, just how bad is it when it comes to the goalie report and looking at the lay of the land? George?
Yeah, this has been a brutal week. In some ways, it's a brutal season. Not so much for injuries. You know, that goes a week-by-week thing. But, you know, I was thinking the past couple of weeks, as far as your fantasy drafts, if you went goaltending heavy in your fantasy drafts, which generally I tend to do, you know, I'm pretty much a proponent. I'm taking a goalie in the first two rounds, and I want to get my second one probably in the next three, four rounds after that. I like to have that position pretty much solid with one top five goaltender, and then my next goaltender being the, you know, a strong goaltender, goaltending too. If you did that, which I said I did in most leagues, you're in trouble this year. Between injuries and goaltenders not quite being what it used to be, you and I have talked how goal scoring is up. So you're not getting the numbers you quite expected, especially in points leagues. So that's something I've noticed here, where if you banked on goalies, you're probably in trouble in fantasy. And in most of my leagues, although I wouldn't say I'm in trouble, I'm no better than a little bit above 500. You know, something like that. The league you and I play, that's a different sort of league. I didn't have a first-round pick, so I was going to struggle anyway. But it's just, it's not a goaltending year right now. Right now it is a scoring year. And except for someone like me who would have almost always drafts the other way, I'm having some issues. As for the news and notes for goaltending, yeah, it's a little ugly. I mean, you know, unless you live in a cave, you know that Vasilevsky fractured his foot. It happened in practice Thursday. He's out. They're not given a timetable yet. And a fractured foot is weird. It could be a couple of weeks. It could be a couple of months. We don't know yet. Dominguez, obviously, a must pick up. The problem with Dominguez, boy, he's played like crap so far this year, outside of the win last night. So maybe being the starting goaltender, maybe the fact that he's going to play almost every game, because after Dominguez, there's not much left there in Tampa after Dominguez, which is going to bring me to my next point about a trade going to happen here. But I think Dominguez, I'm not going to look at the numbers here. If you're going to go, if you're going to pick up Dominguez, you go get him, and you don't worry about the numbers. You know, I think he'll play better now that he's playing every night in, night out, getting all the practice time. I think he'll play better. Edward Pasquale is the backup. Yeah, someone no one's heard of. You know, and I do wonder if once the Lightning find out, I don't know anything. Like I said, this could be a couple of weeks. You know, he could be back by the holidays, or it could be, you know, the next calendar year. We don't know. Let's say it's next calendar year. The foot's going to take that long to heal. I do wonder if the Lightning have to go out and make a deal, you know, to get an experienced backup or even maybe a starter over Dominguez. So I think it's something to look out for here. I'm just curious to see how the Lightning will attack this, and I don't think we'll know that for sure until we find out how long Dominguez's out. If he's only going to be out 3-4 weeks, they'll live with if the Vasilevsky's only going to be out 3-4 weeks, they'll live with Dominguez and Pasquale. But he's going to be out double that, 2 months. Then I do wonder if they make a deal here for either a legitimate backup or even a goaltending one who could start over Dominguez. Just something to watch there. All right, other news here. Good news, and this is another conspiracy theory here I'll throw out there. Quick, looks like he's going to begin skating today, the weekend. I just find this funny. You know, before Crawford hurt himself, it looked like Quick was still a ways away. Now, all of a sudden, they're having goaltending issues up the wazoo there in Los Angeles. Not playing well. Struggling. Made the deal for Haglund. Traded away Pearson. You lose your top two goaltenders. All of a sudden, Quick, he can come back soon. You know, Budaj's sick. He may not even be able to play tonight because he's got an illness. So there's a lot of weird things going on here. But listen, you're taking good news. Quick looks like he could skate. That doesn't mean we'll discuss this more on Monday, but I'm more than likely not going to advise you to start Quick next week, even if he comes back, because you don't know how many games he'll play. You don't know when exactly he'll come back, and he could be rusty. So I'm still going to wait there. But Quick could be coming back shortly, either before or right after Thanksgiving. So maybe you get Quick back in your lineup. Washington, Holtby, upper body injury. He's questionable to play. They have called up Ilya Samsonov. Now, whenever you hear about this, people go, oh, my God, they called up somebody. It must be bad. No, a team can't go in without a backup goaltender. So Holtby can't play this one game. Generally, you have to call up somebody just to cover yourself there. So that doesn't scare me that they called up Samsonov. But once again, I think Holtby, you're probably without him until next week, but I don't think it's serious. I think he'll be okay there. So hopefully we get Holtby back in. And I got him in a couple of leagues, so once again, not happy about this. So good news, Rask returned. He left for a personal reason. We don't know why, what that reason might be. Was it just because he wasn't playing better and needed to get his head on straight? He needed time away from the team, whatever it might be. I'm not going to speculate on what it might have been. But he's back. All right, he will start tonight. Halak had been starting and playing very well there. Didn't play very well in his last start was Colorado. But Rask is back. He's starting tonight for the Boston Bruins. Philadelphia, more bad news. Brian Elliott hurt again. He's out at least 2 weeks, groin injury. They announced that this morning. So we're not going to see him until December. They're a mess. You know, they called up Alex Lyon, but they're a mess. And you know, you and I have discussed this a couple times this year. Philadelphia's a team that I'm just surprised. I know Elliott was signed, and Newver signed, so you don't want to sign or trade for another goaltender. But my God, if you consider yourself, a playoff team, a team that's on the rise, how can you go into a season with this where he gets hurt every year? Now he's not that great when he plays anyway. Yeah, once again, Philadelphia is struggling in net with injury here. Elliott out 2 weeks here, sort of like a good luck situation here. What do you want to do? I mean, do you want to go get Calvin Pickard? Newerf's hurt as well. Pickard is available, but man, I'd have to be pretty desperate to go grab him, Scott. Stalock is going to start on Sunday for Minnesota. We have a lot of clarity as far as who's starting this weekend. Unusual for the NHL, but they announced a lot of this. Bobrovsky, all right, he missed the game for an illness. All right, he's okay. He should be back in net tomorrow, but if you're wondering why Kovalchuk played, that's why. Bobrovsky's out with an illness. The good news is they sent down Jean-Francois Berube. He was called up when Bobrovsky was hurt. They sent him back down. A good sign that Bobrovsky's ready to go here. So maybe not some worry there. Grubauer was going to start tonight for Colorado. Sparks going to start for Toronto tonight. We'd heard earlier in the week, Paul Maurice had stated that he was going to get Brassard in net. And he's going to get Brassard in net tonight. He starts for Winnipeg tonight, so some clarity there. Like I said, weird that we know this. Generally, we don't get this kind of clarity. Arizona, Ranta, they keep telling us he's day-to-day. Well, he's still day-to-day. He's progressing, I guess is the best word you could say, and still day-to-day, could return pretty much at any time now. Obviously, if I'm a Ranta owner, I really want him to play this weekend. This way, I didn't start him anyway. I'm not going to start him, I can watch him. Then I can put him back in my lineup at the beginning of next week. I hate when an injured player returns in the beginning of the week, because then I have to make that decision. Oh, man, in a weekly lineup league, do I want to put him in right in the beginning? What if he gets hurt again? I only get one game out of him, one period out of him. What if he's terrible? And he wrecks my ratios in a head-to-head league. So hopefully we're going to play this weekend, but I'm not betting on it. Vancouver, if you worry about the backup, Anders Nilsson has a finger injury. He is practicing, should return shortly. But once again, nothing you're really looking forward to there. The Rangers, they played the backup game, where they sent down Georgiev, called up Mrazek, and then they reversed it. Just getting really Georgiev some action here. They didn't want him to get cold at all, just waiting behind Henrik Lundqvist game after game. Really nothing to see there. Boston, my favorite goaltending name was sent down to the AHL. Daniel Vlader. Dear Star Wars fans, I mean Daniel Vlader, Darth Vader. I mean, come on. But he sent back down to the AHL. We talked about this on Monday, that I was wondering if Kincaid was going to get a starting run in the short term here with Schneider playing so bad. Joke that Schneider hasn't won a game in the NHL in a calendar year. Almost a calendar year, it's December. Kincaid came in this week. I think he's won two games, had a shutout last night. Kincaid's the starter there for the – I don't know what they're going to do with Schneider. I speculated that in a perfect world, they'd love to send him down for a three-week conditioning stint, but they can't. He's not hurt. This is going to make up an injury, and if they did that, they'd have to get his permission to sort of do that. So it's a tough situation there with Schneider, not playing well when he's in net, and you wouldn't think he's going to get any better not playing at all, which is what's happening now. So the Devils are in a tough spot there, and so is Schneider. That's it, tough. Koskinen is going to start Sunday for the Oilers, and Talbot will start Saturday. Another situation we talked about here. This is getting messy in Edmonton. If you're a Talbot owner, I'd start to sweat. And if you're a Talbot owner, you better go claim Koskinen. Because I think Talbot's running out of lifelines here, where eventually they're going to give that starting job to Koskinen, who's outplaying him, and it's outplaying him pretty badly here. It's sort of the same thing that's going on with Calgary, with Rittich and Mike Smith. If you're a Mike Smith owner, and that comes down, and you can't be crying right now. You've been warned now for at least a couple of weeks that this could be coming. You should be going out and claiming David Rittich. If you don't have a death spot on your roster, maybe you want to try and trade Mike Smith, or try and trade Cam Talbot to get out of this headache, and let another team owner worry about if they're not aware of what's going on here. But I would be worried about the starting status of Talbot and Mike Smith. I think Mike Smith gets a little bit more of a run here because he's Mike Smith, been around forever, NHL veteran. Talbot, though, he's been disappointing out for almost two straight years, and Koskinen is clearly outplaying him. Rittich is doing the same for Mike Smith, but I think Mike Smith gets a little bit more run there as far as who goes. Ottawa, if you're worried about Mike Condon, who was sent down to the AHL, he has a lower body injury, probably a groin. He's out. They don't expect it to be long-term, but he's out of the lineup right now. So, it doesn't matter where you're a goaltender, Scott. You're getting hurt.
Wow. That's all I have to say. Just wow when it comes to the goaltending report last show and this report. But thank you for thoroughly breaking it down for us, George. All right, my follow-up question always is looking for those fantasy owners in daily lineup leagues who might need to stream a goaltender or maybe cover themselves with some of these goaltender issues and injuries that are happening. Looking at the short term, 13 teams playing this week with two games. Eight of those 13 are in back-to-back situations, so we have a likely backup start. As you sort of detailed a lot of these scheduled starts already that we know about, as you said, it's unusual. So what low-owned number one goaltenders or backup owners do you think have some decent starts this weekend? Do you think would help out some of our fantasy owners looking to cover some injuries or just get the extra start in? George?
I actually have it as 15 teams playing two games this weekend, so one of us can't count. Very likely could be me. But one good – I don't want to say it's good news that people get hurt, but, the injuries mean their goaltending starting jobs are open. You have guys available here. We'll go over a few. Halak, we know he should already be gone. He should have been gone weeks ago, but he was available there. Boston does play back-to-back Saturday and Sunday, Friday and Saturday, I'm sorry, at Dallas, at Arizona. Rask is going to start tonight. I assume Halak gets tomorrow. So if an owner decided to release Halak because Rask came back, hey, I'll take Halak against the Arizona Coyotes tomorrow. No problem there whatsoever. Grubauer, what do you imagine he's going to get to start? No, it's not great, mind you, because he's going to start against Washington tonight. So maybe you don't like that. You probably would have rather had the Anaheim start on Sunday. But still, hey, beggars can't be choosers. You can get a shot with Grubauer tonight if necessary. Now, I already mentioned Koskinen, who I think is a claim anyway. But he's certainly a claim this weekend. He's getting Vegas on Sunday. I'll take my chance with that. And you might be able to keep him longer than just this game here. And this is why I think he's a nice pickup. Budaj, of course, if you're looking for a goaltender who's going to start a few games into next week. Even if Quick comes back, I don't think he's coming back Tuesday. I think it'll be more next weekend he might come back. So Budaj can get a couple of games out of him. But as we know, as we just discussed earlier in the show, Kings not really playing all that well. So maybe you don't want to go that direction. But once again, somebody you could throw in there. Stalock for Minnesota is going to start Sunday at Chicago. Certainly somebody you got to think about. Chicago, come on, they won. They finally won their first game in last nine or something silly like that. They're not playing very well. Kincaid should be a pickup anyway. And if you're a Schneider owner, you'd like to have Kincaid. That's where you, especially if it's in a daily lineup league, it's where you're covered here. But Kincaid, he's been up and down this season. Started strong, got quiet. Now he's playing well again here. Maybe he realized that the job, could he steal the starting job from Schneider? You know, and be the starter if Schneider's the backup the rest of the year? Schneider may be the one making the money, but this wouldn't really shock me here. So Kincaid is out there. Rittich, same situation as Koskinen. You know, if you need a goaltender, you want to bank more on the long term, you go out and get him. And Domingue, obviously. I mean, come on. It's Tampa Bay. Good team. You want to go pick him up. He could be a problem with your ratios. I think you're going to be happier with him as far as wins. But as far as goals against average save percentage, that's probably not going to be so great. Certainly not going to be anywhere near what Vasilevsky does. So you need to temper your expectations. I think Domingue has much more value in a points league than he does in your standard league, your category league, because you're going to have some issues here where he's not going to like I said, he may get to the W's, but those percentage categories not going to help you all that much in. And those are really your goalies you're looking at tonight. Other teams, Anaheim plays twice with it's not back-to-back. I don't know if you'll see Ryan Miller here. Buffalo, I don't think we're going to the backup there. Carolina, one injury I didn't mention was Mrazek. He is getting closer to a return. They say he's progressing, but not skating yet with the team. So Darling could get one or two starts this weekend against Columbus in New Jersey. Chicago, we're not going with the backup there. I don't think we care. Dallas doesn't play back-to-back, so he may not get Hedobin in net. So listen, nothing really to look at there. Rangers. Both teams, both the Islanders and Rangers, you're not going to go with the goaltenders this weekend. Rangers, I guess if I had to go pick a choice here, I'd probably go with Leonard if nobody starts. But neither once again, the Islanders last couple of games, goaltending having an issue again. Didn't play all that great last night. Went 7-5 out of the Ranger game. The over came in, boys and girls. St. Louis, I didn't discuss this one at all. I sort of left Jake Allen out of our little conversation of starters you have to worry about, maybe backups you want to grab. But they're not very happy with his play either there. The problem is Chad Johnson has outplayed him. The numbers are better for Chad Johnson. He could be a sneaky pickup if you're completely desperate. Everyone else is gone. Chad Johnson, you're playing a long game here, but, man, Jake Allen just hasn't played well. We gave him the excuse last year of, he had the new baby, wasn't getting any sleep. But those numbers haven't picked up this year at all. So there are some problems there for Jakey Jake. Vegas, I don't think we're going down to Subban there. And that's it. And by the way, you were right. There are only 13 teams. I can't count. Then again, no one told me there'd be math today.
That is true. Very expansive goaltender report and very complete. Thank you for that. I think part of what tripped you up might have tripped me up on the schedule thing. A couple of different schedules I looked at before today's show had the Islander and Ranger game from last night scheduled for tonight, like on their schedule, which was of course wrong. So technically you're right, technically you're wrong. It wasn't entirely your fault, but thank you for breaking down for that as always. And before I let you go, George, I just want to remind you, you might want to look, maybe make a trade with an owner who has Vasilevsky's backup as well as Schneider's backup. I think Pasternak might do it. In fact, you know, I would trade you to Ming and Ben Kincaid for Pasternak. Just want to sort of plant that seed in your mind. If your listeners haven't figured it out, I have both of George's backup goaltenders, of the three goaltenders he's carrying, so we'll tweak him there. So, hey, just think about it, George. Just sort of, like I said, planting that seed, Pasternak in your first-round draft pick for next year sounds like it would be fair. Of course, I'm always teasing. I'll let you go as I wrap up things and look at the skaters and the recommendations for picking up players from that. George already said all of our teams that are playing two games this week. Of the teams that stick out to me, of particularly good schedule, Minnesota playing Boston and Chicago, New Jersey playing Detroit and Carolina. I like those teams in particular. And I'm intrigued by Anaheim because they've got that good sort of that Friday-Sunday two games, which is what you really sort of want for most daily lineup leaguers. A Saturday's game is going to be full, so they can look at them as well. If you're looking just for a one-off in those daily leagues for Fridays for tonight, I pick up Winnipeg playing against Buffalo at home in Winnipeg is interesting. Colorado playing against that Washington team that's a little bit decimated, missing a couple of their key players from that top six, is particularly intriguing. On Saturday, I know most of you have a full lineup, but still Boston playing against Arizona, Tampa Bay playing against that Pittsburgh, that Philadelphia team are intriguing. New Jersey playing against Carolina on Sunday looks like the best option for me as well for Sunday's games. As far as specific player recommendations, how about Alex Tuch for the Vegas Golden Knights? The right wing is only 29% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo Leagues, and he does have 11 points in 11 games. Since coming back from injury in the last four games, he's got 2 goals, 4 assists, plus 2 power play points playing on that second line with Eakin and Pacioretty. He's got St. Louis and Edmonton, which are two pretty good matchups this weekend, but even bleeding into next week, 2 games against about Calgary and also they're playing Arizona. He could get a nice 5-game, 2-week stretch out of that. Also, Alex Kerfoot, the Carolina Avalanche center, left wing eligible player, at least in Yahoo League, is only 13% on average, owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo Leagues. In the last 6 games, he's got 3 goals, 5 assists, 4 power play points, playing on that second line for the Avalanche. You got Washington, that depleted Washington team, and Arizona. Anaheim for this weekend, bleeding into next week, L.A., Arizona, and Dallas. You could keep them extra long as well. If you're looking for some centers, I got a couple of good options for you. How about Travis Zajac, the New Jersey Devil? His center is only 9% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo Leagues for the last 10 games, 5 goals, 5 assists, a power play point, and moved up to that play on that top line with Hall and Palmieri. That's regardless of whether Hershier comes back or not. Playing Detroit and Carolina this weekend. First game next week is Montreal as well, so you might get a good 3-game stretch from him. Nico Koivu, the Minnesota Wild, the center's only 18% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo Leagues. He's got 10 points in the last 6 games, 2 goals. In the last 2 games, 2 goals and 3 assists, 3 power play points, playing Buffalo and Chicago this week. Ottawa to start next week should be a nice little run. If you need a defenseman, Vegas Golden Knights, Colin Miller, the defenseman's only 15% owned on average in the ESPN and Yahoo Leagues, but 4 assists in the last 4 games, 2 of those on the power play, averaging just shy of 2 hits and blocks per game in the last 6 games as well. St. Louis Edmonton on the docket for this weekend. And looking towards next week, Boone Jenner, he is playing on Saturday. Most of your lineups are going to be filled, but if you're looking to get an early start next week, the Columbus center and left wing eligible player, at least in Yahoo Leagues, only 26% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo Leagues. But in the last 7 games, he's got a goal and 5 assists, plus 4, a power play point, averaging just shy of 3 shots on goal per game, as well as 2 hits per game. You've got Carolina on Saturday, and then home at home against Toronto and playing Pittsburgh next week. That should be pretty good schedule for next week. All right, folks, that's all that we have for today. A little bit running a little extra long, but lots of information to give. Hope it's all good and helpful for your fans and fantasy owners. Stick with us all year long. Every Monday, every Friday at 2 o'clock, we're here for all your hockey needs. Have a good hockey weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday.